God bless you.
Let's see what glasses I have. Here we go.
There's the reading glasses and the singing glasses. You know, I was looking at this to start off with, and I thought about how every time we sit down for a lesson, we pray before the lesson that God opens our hearts. And that's really very, very much what this lesson is about. God opening hearts to His message. So I think it's important that today, as we're reflecting on this message, we ask that God open our hearts, that we may take and put this in context with our everyday life. In the last part of this, and here I hope I don't jump over, it says to meditate on our salvation and to meditate on what God has done for us. And I wonder how often we really do that. To think about, to really think about where we were and where we are now and where we're trying to get. And how did God get us here? How did He bring us to this part of our lives where we're seeking Him and where we're trying to what? Tell others about Him. Right? I think that this looks so much like our world today. That's what I see. I see our world today where people are just going about doing their own thing and whatever feels good, do it. And whatever you believe, you can just take that and run with it. And this is what was going on here. And God comes back and He pulls us in and He says, this is how it works. And that's what I see in this lesson. All right. Would somebody mind reading for us? We're in Isaiah, the book of Isaiah. We're in the 6th chapter. Would somebody mind reading for us verses 1 through 4? The display of God's supremacy. Do we recognize God's supremacy today in the world?
Not enough.
Nope. We don't. And even as I looked at this verse, I thought, He's bigger than this. God is big, big, big. Big, big, big. And you know how, and this may or may not work, but you know how at Christmas time we tell kids Santa Claus sees you? God always sees us. God always knows what's in our hearts. He knows. There is nothing we're doing that surprises Him. We have not caught Him off guard. He knows it. And the amazing thing about this is, as much as He knows, He still seeks after me.
He still loves us.
He still loves me. Why, in the name of God, He does, I do not know. I really don't.
You are precious in His sight.
Why? Why?
Because He made you.
Because He created you.
He made you.
I bet He just smacks His head every time He looks down at me and goes, yes, I did that. But for God to seek me and want me, as glorious as He is, just blows my mind. And I think we really need to meditate on that. We really need to think about that. And think about what He asked Isaiah to do in this lesson. And do we do that?
You got to remember, before He created you, He knew
and did it anyway.
So, yeah.
I mean, was he like crossing his fingers and thinking, I don't know, maybe she'll get it? I mean, it amazes me. It amazes me that he still loves me. But he does. Otherwise, I would have been zapped by now. Right? Okay. Isaiah 6, verses 1 through 4. Will somebody read that for us? Not too many big words in here, bad words.
In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke.
Boy, there's about 10 praise songs that come out of this, isn't there? Isn't it great? You find yourself sitting going, holy, holy, holy. Yeah, I sing the songs. Now we know where they get those lines at, right? Okay, so what happened here? King who died?
Uzziah.
And what was he like? He started out not too bad. You know, he started out not too bad. And then he made this great big mistake that we all make. And what is it? I heard somebody almost say it.
He put himself above God.
Or at least tried to be like God, huh?
Big mistake.
Yeah, big mistake. He kind of envisioned himself, at the very least, as good as God.
So he was drunk with power.
Drunk with something. Right? I mean, he thought he was as powerful as God. To the point that he went into, I don't know how else to describe this, but went into the church, or went into the temple, whatever it was, and burned incense in his own honor, right? Can you imagine? But he did. So he died, and this was kind of a tough thing, because at least at this time, when he died, it created a big turmoil. And think about when leaders die today in countries, our own country. It creates turmoil, doesn't it? People become very, very unsure and what? And scared. It's the unknown, huh? And so here comes Isaiah, and he has a message, and the message is God is in control here, right? The first question is, what did King Uzziah's death mean to the nation?
As a leader.
Same thing you said about now.
Yes.
The nation kind of goes into turmoil.
Yes. You're afraid, loss of hope.
Insecure,
very.
At that time, too, he was one of the only good things. It said it wasn't a great king, but it was only,
He was the best they had at the time.
And it was, and now he's gone.
I think he was probably consistent, and people appreciate that. It makes you feel secure when somebody's consistent. You may be consistently not right, but thinking he's as good as God, he could have been consistently dumb. Okay, what was the contrast Isaiah implied between Uzziah's death between Uzziah and the Lord. What is the contrast here? So simple. It's the one that we can apply to any leader and God.
God is high and lifted up.
Yep.
That king, they're dead. Jesus is still alive.
Right. Yes. Right. You can look at any of the religious leaders, right? Buddha, any of them. Guess what? They're gone. Our God is eternal. Okay, so what Isaiah is trying to show the people is, yes, Uzziah is gone, but our God is still here, and He still rules. And our God is still here today, and He still rules. And He knows everything.
And things are not going to change in that realm. God is here. Jesus is always going to be with us. And that's not changing. That's not something that you look at and you say, now what am I going to do next? It didn't change. He's still there.
Kenny has been preaching this message to me for about 2 weeks. God is always going to be in control. No matter how unsteady we feel, God is always there. He always was. He's there now. He always will be. God's got this. And things come and go in an earthly way, but God is forever.
And just to always remember that the things that happen is God's will, and His will is perfect. He leads us in a path maybe that we don't think we want to be on, but His will is perfect because it is the perfect plan for us.
I've often thought when we sing that song, Here I Am, Lord, when He says, whom shall I send? And it is I. Do we really mean that? Do we really want God to send us out?
As long as it's not too hard.
Right.
Yeah.
As long as it's easy. Do we really want to follow God's perfect plan? Only if it perfectly agrees with ours. Right? And that's my problem. Yeah, yeah, I know that God has a perfect plan. It just might not perfectly go along with what I want. And then I get all upset about it. Right?
Well, the problem is when somebody like Uzziah comes along, and this has happened from the beginning of time, it's happening today. Men and women, us, tend to follow after the man instead of God, because we say, look, I mean, he reads the Bible, he prays, he must be the greatest person. And it doesn't take much to get us to start looking towards
even think
man.
About, and of course I'm not mentioning you, but think about how many churches have been undone following preachers.
Oh yeah.
And many.
Many.
They're still spreading the day.
Yes.
Because
have been undone because they followed a preacher who was a man who is imperfect that led them down the wrong path.
But that made up their own
rules to do.
Follow God.
Yeah.
Read. Meditate on what our faith is about. Ask. Really ask. What is it? Do I believe? And who do I believe?
And lift our pastor up too.
Oh yes.
That's why the New Testament focuses so much on falseness, false prophets, false teachers, and it says that the place that you'll find them is where? It's within the body of Christ.
And I didn't mean that as a, you know, we don't follow the preacher. We do follow the preacher. But I am saying that man is full of mistakes. And the only way that we can be moving towards God is to follow God, not another man.
Everything that man says to the Lord.
And test it.
I don't care who it is. Whether you think he's the greatest preacher or evangelist or whatever in the world.
Or the greatest whatever.
You take it to God.
Yes.
Because
how many friends have we had in our lives that really could influence us because of whatever reason we believed them? Right? Whatever reason we believed them. When we're living our lives, we need, the test needs to be, what would Jesus do? What does God say? I'm telling you, that saying, what would Jesus do? I bet you I use that 100 times in a week when I'm thinking about something. I really do. That's one of those things that really stuck with me.
You know, we usually don't talk politics in church, but when you look at our political world as it is today, how many times a day do you look at that and say, what would God do? Is what is happening, do you think that's godly? Do you think that is...
Isn't that the test we should use?
Yes, I do. I do that
the Bible.
Day, and I think how, you know, people say, well, there's wars in the Bible. Yes, there is. But we have so much that is happening. And it's not a Democrat thing. It's not a Republican thing. It's a political thing.
It's a man thing.
And sometimes you have to separate yourself from it. You have to separate yourself from that.
It's not...
And say, that is not... You know, that is not what I believe. That is not what God is telling me.
Well, we are supposed to be separate. We are supposed to be separate. We are supposed to be looking at things from the godly prism and not the man's prism. That's what we are supposed to do.
And if you really think about it, we are in the last days, and it says there will be wars and rumors of wars, and you won't be able to tell the seasons, but only by the weather. If you really look at the scriptures, you can see we are in the last days, and things are going to be as bad, if not worse, than it was in Sodom and Gomorrah.
I have to make a confession. Sometimes I think, just get it over with. I'm tired of this.
Yeah. I mean, to me, there's times you do look at it and you say, and there's even songs and stuff about that. It says, God, come now.
Yeah.
God, come soon.
Yeah.
You know, come get us, please. Just
this isn't where I live. This isn't, yeah. But then there's our hope.
Mm-hmm.
And the hope is that it is God that is in control. It is God who is supreme over all of this. And nothing is going to happen that he doesn't have his hand on. Nothing is going to surprise him. And if we believe in him, we ride it out with him.
Well, what happens here should not affect... our end game, either, you know.
Right.
Being.
It does. It makes us upset, and we get.
Does.
We do the woe is me, which we're going to get to. And we do. We wring our hands, and we get so upset. Meditate.
Mm-hmm.
God has got this. We say he is the supreme being. He's got this.
It's all in the big plan.
The big plan.
It's the big picture.
Okay. In what ways did Isaiah's vision display God's sovereignty?
Angels?
Well, with the seraphim that gave respect by covering their face, because we cannot look upon the face of God, by covering their feet because the temple was, and his throne room was like holy ground. So they were giving respect to God.
Did you ever look up seraphim? And when they said that they had three sets of wings or six wings, in my mind, I'm a visual person, I was really trying to put that together. So I looked up what a seraphim might look like. It was, and I thought it was going to be pretty crazy. It was actually beautiful. They were beautiful, and they were bright and shining and like fire. And it wasn't like they had wings in some case. It was wings here, and wings here. It looked like actually one big wing with... I thought it was... They were beautiful. And they covered their faces and covered their feet. I figured you'd be particularly happy that they did that because Kenny hates feet.
What does
Wayne mean? Wayne, isn't this great? You're right. It means two. I was thinking twine, as in bailing. And that didn't work for me, so I had to look that up too. Twain means two.
What does it say? North is north and south is south, and never the twain shall meet.
The two shall meet. Yes, it means two. I thought it was twine, as in wrapping the bales. What'd you think?
The fancy word for feathers.
Feathers that man describes, whether it's Isaiah, Ezekiel, John over in the book of Revelation, he's looking at God showing him something. He's trying to describe it with what little knowledge he has. That's like us trying to describe something futuristic with what little knowledge we have. So when it talks about two of each, twain this, twain that, what God was trying to get him to see or to understand wasn't the exact picture. The two. He wanted me to see what was the meaning of that. Why did he have two for flying, two for covering, two for feet? Why? And it's all about humility.
And the reverence of God.
And reverencing God. And
yes.
The wings and the feet. It's all about service to God. So Isaiah was trying to explain. I mean, this was a lot for Isaiah to try to explain, and this is how God
it's a lot for us
to explain it.
Yes.
So,
and in one sentence, we are trying to grasp what all of this means. You know, the twains. I mean, we are trying to grasp that this means that the seraphim were so reverent to God that they covered their face and actually it seemed to me like they covered any exposed skin, their feet, their face, they were covered.
Well, I think it was also showing that God is superior. Is superior.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, the angels are there, God still.
Oh my gosh, yes. God is it. There's a point somewhere in this lesson where it says God is over the angels. And when I read that, I was like, duh. I know that. You know, God is it. He is over everything. Okay. What does the throne symbolize?
The ruler. He's the ruler.
Superiority. The ruler. The head dude, what's in charge.
The king was on the throne, but he died.
Yeah. God didn't know, did he? No, God's still on the throne. Right? What was the primary role of the seraphim?
Praising God.
Yes. I love that. That's their primary role, praising God. And they were singing back and forth to each other. Mm-hmm. Right? What were they singing?
Holy, holy, holy.
Holy, holy, holy. Yep. I love it. Great imagery to that. Yeah. You know it's got to sound good.
Isaiah was still trying to contrast the difference between heavenly and earthly. And we know that when you read verse 5. So God was trying to show him that there was no comparison. Because when you read verse 5 in your lesson, you see that Isaiah, he said, oh, I'm undone. I'm
unclean.
I'm not worthy. So God was trying to show that this happens to us a lot in our life. Whenever God tells us to do something, the first thing that comes into our mind is what?
You're not worthy.
Right.
I like
and God's
that.
Trying to say,
Jonah. Yeah.
I wouldn't have asked you to do it if I didn't think you were worthy. But the first thing out of our mouth is we're not worthy. So God was trying to show Isaiah. He said, Isaiah, quit comparing the things of the world to the things here, because there is no comparison. But we have a hard time seeing that in our life.
But not to get to the end of the story. But what does God do for us? Because
He makes us worthy.
That's right.
He makes a way.
He provided a way. So that excuse,
we are worthy because we have come astray.
And He sent us Jesus Christ. Now in this, well, let's read before I blow the whole story, which I have such a tendency to do. Verses 5 through 7. Will somebody please read those?
Then said I, woe is me, for I am undone. I became a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King and the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from the altar. And he laid it upon my lips, and lo, this hath touched my lips, and thy iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged.
Woe is me. There's another couple songs here. I am undone. And that is how we feel when we recognize God's holiness. I can never compare. And if you don't feel that way, you have a problem. If you are not humbled in the presence of God, you have a problem. And it is a big one. Right? Okay. So Isaiah is telling God, I'm not worthy. Right? And so what does God do? God sends what?
The angel brings
the seraphim
live coal and puts on his
mouth
to purge the sin.
Yep.
And if you read different stories throughout the Old Testament, fire is a refining tool. And they use that. That's why the altar. That's why they burn things on the altar for sacrifices. Fire refines them.
It purifies.
Mm-hmm. So what did he do? The very thing that Isaiah said to God, my lips are unclean.
He cleaned them.
Now, personally, initially, my response to this was, ouch. Ouch. Hot coal on the lips. Ouch.
No. Notice he said, thy sin is purged. He said, your iniquity is taken away, but your sin is purged. Why is that?
Because God took it away. mean, it's...
Yeah, but the sin could, the sinfulness couldn't be taken away yet because of what?
Christ hasn't.
Christ hadn't been there yet, that's right. The Old Testament, when you read, up until the time that Christ was crucified, they could only look forward to their sin being removed and receiving the righteousness of Christ. But it, so if Christ hadn't came and been crucified yet, we would still be in that same place ourselves.
Okay, wait, back up, Eric, for a second. Thine iniquity is taken, and thy sin is purged.
Yeah, he took his iniquity away.
Meaning, what's iniquity?
He took away all of those. See, Isaiah had these thoughts that he wasn't worthy.
And right.
So Christ, God took that away. He said, I took all those thoughts
doubts.
And everything. Yeah, the doubt. He said, I took that away. And he said, I purged your sin. Meaning he couldn't remove it. Only Christ could do that. But he said, I purged your sin. That way you don't have to live with that sinfulness unless you choose to do so yourself.
Our body can only hold so much sin.
Yes. So
some of it has to go away.
Yes.
Make so room for more.
Right.
Well, I don't think that's the
attitude. That's what the Corinthians thought.
So if purge doesn't mean take away, what does it mean?
It'd be... In the Old Testament, they sacrificed. That
okay.
purged the sin. It took shedding of blood to purge the sin. Meaning, you're offering up to God, saying that I have sinned. This blood is covering the sin, but it's not completely taking it away because sin wasn't taken away until Christ took it upon Himself upon the cross.
So do you think it literally a coal was dropped on his lips?
Well, I don't... This is symbolic.
I mean, I know it's supposed to be symbolic,
so,
but I was thinking, you know, should... If a coal, hot coal was dropped on your lips, would you be able to speak afterwards?
Right.
Or not? So you could not speak unclean words because you couldn't speak. So it was, you know... I understand it being symbolic, but it kind of... gives you a picture of not being able to speak those unclean words or be, you know.
You're seeing the symbolism there.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did not look at this from the it was purged versus taken away. That didn't come into my brain. But if he laid the coal on his lips and his doubts were taken away and his sin was purged, so purged means what?
To cast away.
There's one sentence here that says, all his sins and iniquities had been purified by the cleansing mercy of the Holy One.
Okay, so that word.
Yeah, so that coal actually purified rather than, if you'd rather use that word rather than purged, it purified.
I just didn't want to miss on
which could only be done through the mercy of God.
And can it be done any other way today?
No.
Well, today, Your sin has been, he said, I took it as far as the east is from the west. Now we still see it.
Twine.
But the understanding we have today is that Christ paid the sin debt clear back to Adam and Eve. And forward, clear to...
He paid our sin debt.
So...
But what do we have to do to attain that?
We have to ask Christ to forgive us of our sins.
Yeah, we have to accept that Christ done that for us.
Exactly. It's not, I mean, we have to believe in Him. And we have to believe in what He did, the work of the cross.
In other words, we have to claim it.
Claim it.
Well,
good work.
Just like Tim said, so much of the stuff that's written in the Bible is symbolic. It wants us to develop a picture in our mind of how glorious things could be, but our heart has to be open to accept that beautiful image, that glorious image. And if our heart's closed off, then he's going to send Chris to me and say, hey, you know, I think maybe you need to do this. Or he's going to send somebody. He sent Tim to us saying, okay, we need to do this, and people are on the right track here, but you need a little guidance. And that's what God keeps doing throughout the Scripture. Maybe you are on the right track, but you can still use a little guidance.
Yes.
And we have to be open to that.
We have
to close ourselves off to that guidance, then we are a man on an island. And it's not.
And it's easy to do.
Yeah.
It's easy to do. Take my word for it. It's easy to do.
And the hardest thing, too, is sometimes, like Isaiah said, woe is me. I keep thinking of Eeyore, you know. He had such a negative attitude about everything. And we can get that way.
Yes.
We can get a really negative
attitude. Yes, yes, yes.
And it seems to be something that we slip into rather easily.
I do.
And it's hard to get out of.
I do. I get the what's the point attitude all the time. Is it time for us to wrap this up?
Yes, pretty much.
So Mimi, okay. I did a search for the contrast between sin and iniquity. And this is from crosswalk.com, the Bible Project. Sin is missing the target, God's standard. Iniquity is the bent character or perverse desire that causes the miss.
Oh, okay.
The devil made me do it.
Yeah. No. For all those people that remember Flip Wilson. Okay, let's see. Let's just skip to 10 real quick. How would the people respond to Isaiah's teaching?
Not good.
Not good.
People aren't going to listen.
And do they listen now?
No.
They do not. There is so much more to the end part of this lesson, and I'm sorry we didn't get to it. I will try to endeavor to get better at reaching the end of things.
No, you can't. I think they give us too many verses.
Tim, I have learned in the last months that you personally and your church can take 4 verses and make a night of it. And I would be sitting there going, I cannot believe they got all that out of this. But that's my ignorance. That's my ignorance. Everybody, thank you for putting up with me today.
Thank you, Mimi. I appreciate
it. I have something I have to do about.
Okay, quickly.
Carl,
okay.
What can we do? Can we take food to him?
This is something that Kenny really is struggling with, I will tell you with.
I can't stand to see my friend act like that. Be like
that. Does his daughter not still live there in that trailer?
Yes, she does.
Does she live with him?